It is my pleasure to welcome back. We've done really important work together in the past on air. Dr. Mohammad Raza, interventional cardiologist. And he's board certified in cardiovascular disease and interventional cardiology. Dr. Raza completed a residency in internal medicine at Drexel University College of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Raza also completed a fellowship in cardiology and interventional cardiology at Drexel University College of Medicine, also in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Raza has extensive experience in the field of interventional cardiology with the prime focus on structural heart disease interventions. Dr. Raza's special interests include interventional cardiology, valvular heart disease, adult congenital heart disease, complex coronary interventions, and peripheral vascular disease. Dr. Raza has authored numerous articles in peer-reviewed journals, and he is an accomplished speaker on all of these topics and more. And Dr. Raza holds several leadership titles as well at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, Acting Division Director, Director, Structural Heart Program, Director of Interventional Cardiology, Fellowship Program. In terms of professional accomplishments, there are many. I'll give you a few. Fellow of the American College of Cardiology and a Fellow of the Society for Cardiovascular Angiography and Interventions, specialty training, cardiology and interventional cardiology, Drexel University College of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I also mentioned double board certified cardiovascular disease and interventional cardiology. And our topic this half hour with Dr. Raza on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is understanding heart valve disease. Dr. Raza, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Harry, to you and all the people who have tuned in. I'm really excited to talk about this topic, valvular heart disease, how to recognize and how to treat them early on.
Thank you for all the great work that you do. I like to call it all the lives that you're saving. What are the four valves in the heart and what is their function?
Yeah, so to understand the function of heart valves, it's important to understand the function of heart in general. So heart is a pump in the body. Its job is to pump blood into our organs, and it has four chambers, the two top chambers and two bottom chambers. On the right side, between right upper and lower chamber of the heart, there is a valve called tricuspid valve, which is also commonly called a forgotten valve. We can dig deeper into it later. And then between the right bottom chamber of the heart and lungs, there's a valve called pulmonic valve that lets the blood out of the right side of the heart into lungs. As blood flows through the lungs, picks up oxygen, it flows back into left side of the heart. So between left upper chamber of the heart and lower chamber of the heart, there's a valve called mitral valve. And then the left bottom chamber of the heart pumps blood into the body, and it passes through an exit valve called aortic valve. The left bottom chamber of the heart is also the main pumping chamber. And when we refer to a heart function, if heart function is normal, we in general say refer to the function of this left bottom chamber of the heart. So for the proper functioning of the heart, the valves have to be functioning properly, because the valve's job is to make sure blood is flowing in one direction. It goes from the right side of the heart to the through the lungs to the left side of the heart, and the left side of the heart then pumps into the body, and that is the oxygenated blood. And that's how the circulation works. That's how heart functions, and that's how the valves in the heart help the blood flow to go in one direction.
Such a good explanation. And it makes me want to ask you this follow-up question on the topic. So we have four valves, and you did a great job breaking it down. If you have a problem with one valve, do you also have a problem with the other three now? Are they independent of one another? Do they work in coordination with one another? You know, one has a problem, then one, you know, then four have a problem? Or does one have a problem and three don't have a problem?
It's possible that one valve is not functioning properly, and early on, that could be isolated one valve problem. However, if left untreated, it could affect other valves' function as well, because, as you said eloquently, that there is some level of coordination between the different valves. It also depends the mechanism of failure, which we can dig deeper into in a minute. But valves could have, isolated problem. They could have, they could secondarily affect other valves, or in some cases, you know, more than one valve could be affected with a disease or other conditions. So it could be combination of isolated to multivalvular heart disease.
Our guest this half hour is the distinguished interventional cardiologist, Dr. Raza, on DeBoer Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Raza. Today's topic this half hour is understanding heart valve disease, and we're off to a really good start with the important content that Dr. Raza is sharing. Dr. Raza, what are heart valve diseases?
So the valve could go bad by not opening properly, which is called stenosis, where the valve is restricting the flow of the blood. Or it could be a leaky valve, where in that case the valve is not closing properly, so the blood is regurgitating or leaking backwards. We call it valvular regurgitation. So either it's narrowed and it's not opening properly, or it's not shedding properly, which means it leads to leakiness. So,
by the way, I've always wanted to ask you this, and you just reminded me, Dr. Raza. If you have the leaky valve and it's backing up, where does that go? Does the body just miraculously handle it and absorb it? That sounds to me like that can't be a very good thing. What happens with that?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. So body does try to compensate early on, but as the valvular heart disease gets worse or more severe, that backing up of blood ultimately starts to cause backing up of blood in the lungs or in the legs, causing patients to have shortness of breath, because keep in mind the job of lungs is to oxygenate blood, and if there is too much fluid or blood backing into lungs, the oxygen can't get into the blood, and people can have feelings of shortness of breath. Same way, if it's backing into the right side, and it can have edema of the legs or swollen legs. So early on, the heart is trying to compensate, and that's why it's important to recognize early on and intervene as needed, instead of waiting until the last minute when, you know, the heart that is compensating is not able to compensate anymore.
Dr. Raza, if that's leaking and it's for any length of time, let alone a prolonged period of time, can that cause damage to the lungs?
Yes, it can cause damage to the heart, because keep in mind, the valves are making sure the blood is flowing in one direction, but if the valve is regurgitating or leaking backwards, then what we call it's a volume overload. So the blood that was supposed to go forward is pumped backward and comes back. So more blood comes forward from the lungs, in addition to the blood that is has leaked backwards. So the overall, there's more stress on the heart because of this malfunction of the valve, and ultimately the heart will start to dilate, which means it will start to become larger, and same way backing up into lungs will cause higher pressures in lungs, and it can cause lung damage. It can cause heart damage, which can be unrepairable if it's left alone for too long. So there are serious consequences of not recognizing early on and fixing it.
So important. The topic this half hour is understanding heart valve disease, as DeBoer Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Raza. All right, let's play multiple choice pop quiz with Dr. Raza. This could be one or all the above, even, maybe. We'll see. Is valve disease hereditary, caused by aging, or from lifestyle choices?
Yeah, so all of the above. So it could be either one of them.
There you go.
There is a hereditary component, and there are patients who have valvular heart disease earlier than others do. So that's the hereditary component. For example, somebody at age 20 or 30 could have valvular heart disease, and that's more congenital, more hereditary. However, in general, the valvular heart disease happens when we grow older, usually, 65 plus age. So that's the most common, it's basically because of a wearing down of the valves as we age. In regards to lifestyle, yes, I mean, there are conditions that indirectly affect the function of the heart. So the lifestyle, for example, smoking, diabetes, obesity, all of the above can cause underlying heart conditions or cardiomyopathy that indirectly or secondarily make heart valves not shut properly and secondarily cause heart valve disease.
So important. We only take one break during Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, and today it's presenting Dr. Raza on a very important topic, understanding heart valve disease. We'll take that break right now, then we will be going uninterrupted through the end of today's program. When we come back, Dr. Raza will address the issue of what are the symptoms of heart valve disease, and there could be listeners right now dealing with certain things that you're not even fully aware of, where when you listen to Dr. Raza share with you things like the symptoms and some of the other very important information that he has shared and still more that he will share. And we have many more topics to share with you when we come back. But pay close attention, because you could be dealing with something that you're not even fully aware of, that this could really make you want to do what I'm suggesting that you should do if you're dealing with any symptoms, and that is schedule an appointment at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. You can do that by phone at 609-621-2080 or on the web, any digital device, your handheld, cell phone, whatever, on the web at demanddeborah.org. Back with Dr. Raza in just a little bit. Don't go away. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. It always flies by with Dr. Raza. If you're just joining us, Dr. Raza is an interventional cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. He holds several leadership titles as well: division director, director of structural heart program, director of interventional cardiology, fellowship program at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, uniquely qualified to talk about today's topic, understanding heart valve disease. And Dr. Raza, we teased right before the break, what are the symptoms of heart valve disease?
Yeah, so the common symptoms of valvular heart disease are shortness of breath. So let's say if a patient is otherwise walking around, climbing up flight of steps, walking their dogs without any symptoms, now they start to feel short-winded. In some conditions, they could have chest discomfort, dizziness, lightheadedness, lower extremity edema, which is a pedal edema. Very often what happens is because valvular heart disease happens when you grow older, patients tend to ignore symptoms and feel that these symptoms could be because of getting old. And very often when I ask a patient, do you have any symptoms, the answer is, well, what do you expect from an 80 years old? So it's very common, because the valvular heart disease happens when you are, elderly, as well as it happens very slowly. So patients start shrinking their lifestyles and attribute those symptoms and shrinking their lifestyle to getting older. So essentially, they're not complaining and not presenting early enough. A fun story is I had a 82 years old female who came with valvular heart disease, but was referred by one of the primary care physicians. And when I asked her, do you have any symptoms, her answer was, well, I have no symptoms, but when I'm vacuuming, I feel my vacuum cleaner is too old because I can't push, and I get tired and I get short of breath. And sure enough, we further investigated. She had a critical valve disease, and we ended up replacing the valve through a catheter technique. We can talk later about it. And she was discharged home next morning, and she called me back a few days later saying she's feeling great, she has no more symptoms, and the vacuum cleaner is fine.
The vacuum cleaner is fine. She thought it was the vacuum cleaner. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Well, here's a scary question.
Yeah.
Can you have heart valve disease without experiencing any symptoms?
Yeah, so it could be very indolent. You know, patients could have valvular heart disease for years, maybe decades, without feeling any symptoms. And part of the reason is that the valve is not bad enough, or is not stenotic or regurgitating enough, and the body is compensating, or the heart is compensating for that, as we discussed earlier. So this compensatory phase can last for a long time, where the heart is working harder to compensate for the malfunctioning of the valve, and patients may not feel symptoms for quite some time. But you know, the most important thing is that if there is any symptoms, not to ignore and attribute those symptoms to, like, allergies, the weather changes, or getting older, or I didn't eat right. These are the common ways you end up ignoring symptoms. And could valvular heart disease be asymptomatic in the early phase? Yes, it's possible, but still needs to be recognized, and sometimes we do just keep an eye on that kind of condition to see how, when the patient has symptoms or when we need to intervene upon. At least that's a better way to manage that valve instead of just waiting for the symptoms.
We are visiting with Dr. Raza, interventional cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. To schedule an appointment, you can call 609-621-2080 or on the web at demanddeborah.org. Let me follow up on what you mentioned about diagnosing it. How is valve disease diagnosed?
So commonly a doctor listens to a patient's heart and is looking for any extra or abnormal heart sounds called murmurs. There's a quick test in the office or clinic. And you can quickly diagnose that the valve function is abnormal. Further investigation with an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart, and it can evaluate the structure and function of the valve along with the heart in general. And that echocardiogram is very diagnostic and confirmatory of valvular heart disease. Sometimes we do step forward a bit for further investigation, which may involve the transesophageal echocardiogram, which is like endoscopy kind of procedure where an ultrasound probe is passed down the throat under general anesthesia. Patient doesn't feel any discomfort, and we can get closer to the heart and look at the heart valves more closely and carefully. And some conditions, in some situations, we end up doing a CAT scan or MRI or even a heart catheterization to further investigate. But vast majority of the times, an echocardiogram is sufficient to diagnose the valvular heart disease.
Dr. Raza, if it's not diagnosed, if it's not treated, what does heart valve disease lead to?
Yeah, so first of all, the patient will continue to have symptoms, so shortness of breath, fatigue and tiredness, edema, dizziness, lightheadedness that will persist and will get worse if untreated. It will have also the consequences on the heart because, as we discussed earlier, the heart is compensating for a malfunctioning valve, and that phase only can last so long. And after that, the heart will start to fail, which means the patient will have a congestive heart failure requiring hospitalization and even death. So it will have secondary effects in the lungs. It can have secondary effect in the liver. The way heart, one way to understand how heart is compensating is think about aortic valve disease, which is the exit valve on the left side of the heart. and it lets blood out into the body, and left bottom chamber of the heart is pumping blood. When aortic valve is narrowed, stenotic, we call stenosis, the left bottom chamber of the heart gets thicker, and that is a compensatory mechanism to be able to force the blood through a narrowed valve, very similar to when we go to a gym and lift weights. The muscles get bigger and stronger, but if this process continues, the left bottom chamber of the heart starts to dilate, becomes weaker, and is not able to pump through this abnormal valve. And that is really advanced situation, and it can cause, again, the same things, congestive heart failure, requiring urgent intervention. So it's so important to recognize early on so that the heart is not damaged, it's reversible, and we can fix the valve disease early on without affecting other organs.
Dr. Raza, here's an opportunity for you to share three specific examples. What options are available to treat mitral valve disease, aortic valve disease, and tricuspid valve disease?
Yeah, so let's take mitral valve disease. Again, it's a valve on the left side between top and bottom chambers of the heart. The mitral valve fails predominantly by leaking. So it's a mitral valve regurgitation, which is leaking backwards into the left upper chamber of the heart and then into the lungs. So leaky mitral valve can be repaired through a transcatheter procedure. So in that particular procedure, which is also called transcatheter edge-to-edge repair, we place a tiny catheter in the groin, in the femoral vein, and we pass that catheter all the way into the left upper chamber of the heart. And through that, we pass a clip. We identify where the leak is happening under transesophageal echocardiography. That is being performed live to guide us. We identify which area of the valve is leaking. And then we take this clip and we deploy the clip right where the leak is happening. We can stop the leak. The procedure itself takes approximately 45 minutes to an hour, maybe shorter at times, and the patient can go home next morning. This is a transcatheter mitral valve edge-to-edge repair. It's a repair through a catheter technique. The other way is to put a new valve in the mitral position. That's called the TMVR, and that's also a FDA-approved procedure at this point, and that could be also done through a catheter. The aortic valve is replaced through a catheter technique called TAVR, which is transcatheter aortic valve replacement. Essentially the same way, in this case, we place a tiny catheter in from the femoral artery, and we pass the catheter all the way through the aortic valve. We pass a wire through the aortic valve, and over the wire, we have a valve that we crimp, make it small so it can pass through a catheter. We take the valve all the way inside the old aortic valve, and we expand the valve, and the delivery system comes out. Again, it takes about 30 minutes, 45 minutes at the most, and it's extremely minimally invasive, and patient is discharged home next morning. So that's the TAVR procedure. That is a very mature procedure. We've been doing it for almost close to 15 years now. So in regards to tricuspid valve, which is also, as I mentioned earlier, is called a forgotten valve. The reason is all along we were focused on mitral and aortic valve surgically and even through a transcatheter techniques, and the tricuspid valve got ignored in that process due to multiple reasons. And one of the reasons is that the symptoms associated with tricuspid valve disease are a bit benign. For example, very often patients who have tricuspid valve regurgitation, their symptoms are fatigued and tiredness or edema. And traditionally, patients got treated with the water pill or Lasix to alleviate their symptoms of edema, but without addressing the underlying problem, that is the leaky tricuspid valve. So, these patients, unfortunately, were just kept on medical management without fixing the underlying condition, and there was not a good outcome for the patients. Fortunately, in this day and age, thanks to catheter-based technologies and advancement, we are able to repair and replace the tricuspid valve very similarly as I described before. So we bring the patient in under general anesthesia. We make patient very comfortable. We place a tiny catheter in the right femoral vein, and that catheter then gets us access to the tricuspid valve, and the similar to mitral valve, as I said before, we take this clip and we look at which part of the valve is leaking, and we can deploy the clip right there, and we can stop that leak or minimize it. Same way, we can have tricuspid valve replacement where similarly, we have a catheter that passes through the tricuspid valve, and we place a wire through the catheter, and over the wire, we deliver a new valve, and it's deployed, and the catheter and the wire comes out. Again, takes about 45 minutes to an hour at the most, and a patient is discharged home next morning. So very exciting for patients that all these conditions in this day and age could be essentially managed with minimally invasive transcatheter procedures. All the valves could be addressed, either repaired or replaced.
I know you've already given us a couple of minutes of overtime. Let me ask you for one last follow-up, one last question, because I think it's something that folks would want to know. And if you're just joining us and you've missed any of this when we upload the podcast, please download it, because this has been an absolute clinic on understanding heart valve disease with Dr. Raza on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. You mentioned TAVR. You mentioned that going home the next morning. This is amazing. It's incredible, actually. And what we haven't talked about is there any recovery period? What should people expect afterward?
Yeah, so we recommend patients to avoid any heavy lifting for a few days. Depending on which valve we repaired, it can last somewhere between 1 to 2 weeks. But we recommend them to stay active. We want them to walk around. We want them to be not be a couch potato, but rather be as active as possible. But just avoid heavy lifting. And after approximately 2 weeks, there is really no restrictions anymore. And that's also very important, because keep in mind, traditionally, when patients underwent open heart surgery, the recovery period was weeks to months.
That's right.
And that then, the concept of use it or lose it. So the muscles will get weaker and weaker, and the rehabilitation process was longer. But here in this transcatheter procedures, patient goes home next morning and can do usual activities. So they essentially had a very little downtime.
That is Dr. Raza's presentation this morning on understanding heart valve disease. To make an appointment, you can call 609-621-2080 or on the web, digitally, any device, demanddeborah.org. Dr. Raza, always nice to be with you. Welcome back, and I look forward to next time.
Thank you, Hattie, as always.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you. Thanks for all that you do.